Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you ever so much, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the PPSIA call on the 18th of February 2014. On the call today, we have Mariah Farrell, Steve Metalis, Theo Goertz, Volker Greiman, Graham Bunton, Sarah Wild, Val Sherman, Todd Williams, Darcy Southwell, Alex Deacon, Ben Anderson, John Blumenthal, Luke Sosa, Tatiana Konsova, Kathy Kleiman, and James Liddell. We have apologies from Amir Al-Sadeh, Tobias Sattler, Holly Raish, Paul McGrady, and Gemma Campios. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Mary Wong, and Bivins, Margie Milam, Mike Zupka, Joe Catapano, Terry Agnew, and myself, Matthew Perrigan. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. And I have noted Griffin Barnett for the attendance. Thank you very much, and over to you, Don.
Okay. Appreciate it. Trying to do two things at once here. We've done a really nice job, I think, so far of framing how we're going to proceed. So why don't we just kind of jump in? We've got our groupings, and Marika and Mary had done up a template that in other work, at least one of the work group I've been on, has been very helpful in shaping discussions. So we are going to start with that just to work through the issues and also give everybody a sense of how that functions to make sure it works for our purposes. And I think we're flipping over to that now. Okay. We're going to start after, I think, the consensus that I think we had on the call last week with Category A, as we're now calling it, Question 2. And then go through findings and go into discussion. At this point, I will step back and let Mary and Marika take over on the findings issues and start going through the process.
Thanks, Don. This is Marika. So maybe what I can do first is just briefly explain to you, you know, how the template has been structured, and of course also know that if you have any feedback or input on how we can improve this template to facilitate the working group deliberations and as well capturing outcomes of our discussions, you're free to share those on the call or send them to us after the call by email, and then I'll hand it over to Mary to talk about some of the findings of the WHOIS studies regarding prevalence of proxy and privacy services. So regarding the template that you see up on the Adobe Connect screen, which I also shared with you, I think, by email last Friday, we tried to do in a way of really breaking down the different questions as we have grouped them in the other document and trying to pull in all the relevant information, at least from our perspective, and as I said, anything you think that should be added here, into one place to really allow the working group to focus on the very specific question that has been taken for this specific call and as well this template. But then the same would be done for all the other questions that we have in the charter groupings document, so that we have basically a template for each question that allows us to gather all the relevant information for the working group to start its deliberations on that question. And then at the same time, as you move through the document, being able to capture the working group discussions on input that has been received, either through the working group survey, and that's the information that you currently see in the template. But the idea is as well, as we start receiving input from other SOs and ACs and genus of stakeholder groups and constituencies, that we basically take that input and allocate that to the relevant template. So as the working group moves through the charter questions and relevant sub-questions, you have all the specific information and feedback related to that specific issue at hand. Then hopefully the idea would be, and I think that's one of the sections we may want to add at the end as a kind of conclusion or summary or preliminary conclusion section where we try to capture at the end of the consultations on a specific chart or question, we actually try to capture what is the preliminary conclusion that the working group has come to based on the initial information that it reviewed, which we tried to provide at the outset. So looking at, in this case, some of the definitions, information from the WHOIS studies, input from the WHOIS review final report, and as I said, there may be other information that you think is relevant for this specific question that we more than happily add here at the outset. And I'm basically diving in through, going through the comments received and input provided, and then working our way through, based on that review, what is the preliminary conclusion or answer to this specific question that the working group has arrived at? And the hope is then that by doing that for each of the specific questions, we not only are able to gather all our preliminary conclusions at the end of the day and bring those together, but also have a way of capturing our conversations and using that as well to build the initial report and really provide a track record of what information did the working group review, how did it consider input and comments received, and on the basis of that, what were the conclusions that the working group drew that have led to the eventual policy recommendations on this topic. So that's a little bit the thinking about the template, and as I said, we really hope that you think this can be a useful tool in helping to structure as well as focus the working group deliberations, as you all know that there are a lot of questions to be addressed, and at the same time, many different directions that the discussions can go. So I think I'll leave it at that at this stage. I don't know if you have any specific questions on the template as it stands currently, or if there's any suggestions for improvements or information in this case that you think should be added here, please feel free to share. I'm not seeing any hands. I think I'll just hand it over then to Mary to talk about findings of the WHOIS studies.
Thanks, Marika. And we prepared a set of, very short set of slides. There's people in the working group who are no doubt very familiar with this study and its findings, but there also might be members of the working group who are less familiar, so hopefully this will be helpful. The idea for this or the purpose of this is really to feed back into that template that Marika just showed you, and hopefully you've had a chance to look at in answering the big general question that we're dealing with for this week and next week, which is whether or not, for purposes of the accreditation program, there should be a distinction between a privacy service and a proxy service. So you see now in the template that you saw earlier that there are some definitions of both types of services. The one that we put on the template was taken from the 2013 RAA. There are a few other variants of that definition in different studies, but they more or less really say the same thing and make the same distinction between a privacy service and a proxy service. So this set of slides then talks about one of the GNSO WHOIS studies, and this is on privacy and proxy abuse, and hopefully both the findings as well as perhaps some of the things that the study was not scoped to do might either inform your deliberations or might allow you to craft some further questions or discussion points that you might want to raise in this group or more broadly within the GNSO. So I think a lot of people know that this was one of several that was proposed some years ago in the GNSO as part of an effort to gather objective, verifiable data on certain aspects of the WHOIS system, particularly certain aspects as to what was being used and for what purpose. We were fortunate that we had a team from the National Physical Laboratory in the United Kingdom led by Dr. Richard Clayton, who is known to some of the members of our community, and he's a senior researcher at the University of Cambridge. They took about a year or more to do the study. The initial report was published a few months ago for public comment, and I know a number of folks and your constituencies submitted public comments, which were summarized, and the report of public comment is actually has actually been published. It's now on the ICANN website, and we're hoping that NPL having taken on board the public comments that were submitted and having either amended or clarified some of their results and reports will give us the final report for publication very shortly. In a nutshell, the study tested two related hypotheses. The first is what ICANN asked the team to study. The second builds on the first, and it was what the team felt was important to really try and get a sense of what was meant by the term significant percentage. So you see in hypothesis number one, we asked them to see if it could be shown that a significant percentage of domain names used to conduct illegal or harmful internet activities are registered by either a privacy service or a proxy service in order to obscure the perpetrator's identity. And I can't go into all the study findings today, but essentially the team found this finding to be true across a number of different work packages that covered phishing, typo squatting, and a number of other malicious types of users of domain name activities. The related finding, which the team felt was important to investigate, was to compare the percentage of domain names that were registered in that particular way in hypothesis number one with domain names that are registered also via privacy or proxy services but for entirely lawful internet activities. And for purposes of this work, the team chose a set of lawful internet activities such as banks, law firms, legal pharmacies, and so forth to mirror the activities and industries chosen for the illegal study in hypothesis number one. And they found that this was really only partly true, in that while it is true that the domain names that are used for illegal activities are registered to a substantial extent by either a privacy or proxy service, there are some legal activities, most noticeably banks, for example, who also use a privacy or a proxy service for their registrations. Then if you go down to the next slide, this is the abuse study summary of the findings. You see the various work packages, and you see in the last column whether or not there was a low or a high or an in-between usage of privacy and proxy services. There's obviously much more detail in the report. These are some of the activities that were studied, and why we thought it was important to include this slide was that there were other activities that were either proposed by the community or that ICANN had asked NPL to see if they could investigate, but ultimately for various reasons, the team did not. So while the study showed that the initial hypothesis is true and the related hypothesis is also partly true, what the team also concluded here, the last point on this slide, is that if a domain is registered for purposes of illegal or harmful activity, the registrants use multiple ways to hide their contact details, including to a substantial extent using privacy or proxy services. But at the same time, domain names used for legitimate purposes also may not provide accurate contact information, such as a phone number. How this might be relevant to the work of this working group is what we try to summarize in this slide. And the first thing that was most obvious, I think, to anyone who's looking at this report is that the study does not investigate a distinction between a privacy service or a proxy service. I mean, it is able to tell in some of the domains whether a proxy or a privacy service was used, but the substantive differences or the reasons why someone might use one over the other was not within the scope of the study. The users of these services were not contacted or surveyed for that particular purpose, and there wasn't a breakdown of the usage rates by country or geography. And as I've also said, in terms of studying the lawful domains, that this was not meant to represent the whole universe of lawful users, just as for the harmful domains, it was not meant to represent the whole universe of harmful uses as well. So there are some limitations of the study, not by itself, but in terms of perhaps using what it did and did not do to answer the questions that this group has been tasked to answer. But there are certain things in there that hopefully are useful. And at this point, I'm going to pause because I see that Steve has his hand up.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve Metalitz. This is interesting, but I don't think this has much to do with the question that we're supposed to be looking at, which is, should ICANN distinguish between privacy and proxy services for the purpose of the accreditation process? Now, the first bullet on the slide you have up there shows that this study tells us nothing about that. So I'm not quite sure why you're briefing us on this. You had a previous study that actually did address this and surveyed how many in its sample, how many privacy services it found and how many proxy services, not services, but registrations, how many of the registrations fell in each category. And my recollection was that 95% of the registrations in that universe were in proxy services under this definition, and 5% were in privacy services. Is that correct? And is that our latest information on this?
Thanks, Steve. And I think you're referring to the ICANN study that was done in 2010.
I think it's quite a bit later than that. I think it's a survey right before this. It's and it did have that figure.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes, and I don't have all the figures handy on me right now, but for the benefit of the rest of the working group, I guess first we talked about this survey because some of this had come up in some of the comments for the draft charter question. So one useful part we thought for this would be to show perhaps what you just said, that it isn't terribly helpful to this working group. The studies that were done on privacy and proxy as well, there was one in 2010, as I said, which was the study on the prevalence of domain names registered using a privacy or proxy service, and it was also across the top 5 GTLDs, as this study was, in fact, as all the WHOIS studies were. There was also a separate pre-feasibility survey that was done on Relay and Reveal, and that was later, and the study was completed, I think, last year, and the final report went out, and that used some of the numbers that was done in the earlier survey as well. So I can pull up those numbers. I just want to be sure, Steve, that that may be the study that you're talking about. It wasn't so much a full study in the same way that this was. For various reasons, a full study of Relay and Reveal was not done. It was more a pre-feasibility survey to see whether or not we should do a full Relay and Reveal study, and that was not pursued.
Okay. Did you? I don't know if you answered my question about 95% being proxy and 5% being privacy.
If you let me have a few minutes to pull up the statistics, I hesitate to say that because I think that might depend on what the domains were that were used and the data set, and I don't have that on me right this minute. If you don't mind, Steve, I'll go to Kathy and then James while I pull up the information.
Sure.
Hi. Can you hear me? This is Kathy Klein.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. First, I'm kind of with Steve. This is kind of an interesting time to be presenting this study. So, Mary, kind of in the big picture, let me ask you a few questions. One is, will you also be presenting the study, the even more recent study, will we be getting a summary of the misuse of WHOIS data that came out fairly recently where you have researchers at Carnegie Mellon, very well respected on this, and they these researchers were looking at the public WHOIS data and how it is misused. So kind of a needs assessment for privacy proxy services. So that would be great if we could get a summary of that. The other is the statistic that Steve just asked for. I'd love to see in context. I mean, we may pull it out, but I'd like to see it in context. And here, I just wanted to share with everyone that from my perspective, and the NCSG submitted comments on this, the big rather startling conclusion from the study that Mary just presented was that certain types of legitimate businesses use significant percentages of proxy privacy services. It proved something we hadn't actually expected it to prove. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. And the CMU team is preparing its final report. I'm pleased to say that we've just published the report of the public comments. And again, I thank a lot of folks on this working group and their communities for submitting public comments. So the final report for that should be out soon as well, Kathy.
But Mary, can you present, yes. will you be presenting kind of the interim, the way we have it with Dr. Clayton's work to this working group?
To the extent that that would be helpful to the working group, I'd be very happy to do that.
I think that would be great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. James?
Hi, Mary. Thank you for presenting this. And James speaking for the record. I just wanted to agree with Kathy and Steve's comments prior. I'm not really sure this is directly relevant to the question that we have on the table. This study was very interesting to me because I think while it demonstrated that there are, I think that it actually in some ways muddied the waters more than clarified them, because it did say that quite surprisingly that there were some types of illegal activities or abusive activities that used or engaged in these services less frequently than the typical domain names, and I think that rate was established at about 20-25%. I don't remember the exact number, but it was kind of interesting. But as far as just whether this has any bearing on the distinctions between privacy services and proxy services, I think that the temporary specification that's currently in the RAA was a point of discussion during the drafting of that spec, as well as during the WHOIS review team. And, you know, I'm kind of circling around to the idea that I don't know that from a policy perspective, from an ICANN perspective, that it's really relevant. These services, while they may implement or deliver their services in different ways, I think still have to behave according to, once the accreditation program is finalized, will be required to behave according to specific practices and relay and reveal or cancellation or termination processes. And I think all of those things can be standardized sufficiently so that they apply equally to privacy or proxy services. And I don't know that there's anything in this particular study to this glaring bright light that says, you know, we have to treat these differently. I think that it's really just a matter of implementation. Thanks.
Thanks, James. And, you know, obviously, it would have been helpful, I suppose, if there had been some findings or a study that was done somewhere that was more directly relevant to the work of this working group, which is why we thought that even this study, which in terms of its subject matter one would think might be closest to the work of this working group, is helpful only to perhaps a very limited extent, simply because of the scope of that particular study. On the CMU misuse study, and I see that there's some comments from Carlton and others in the chat, but the misuse that was studied in the CMU study was related to things like junk mail, email spam, and voicemail spam. So while the findings there are interesting, and Kathy, like I said, I'm happy to give a short summary of those findings, if not today, then pretty soon. Again, it may not be something that directly translates to an easy answer for either this question or the rest of the work of this working group. Steve, I don't know if you have your hand up again with a different question, but just a quick look back at the other studies. Like I said, there was a study that ICANN itself did in 2010. There were a couple of studies done by NORC at the University of Chicago in 2009 and 2010. And there was also the most recent one that NORC did was from May 2013, which was the Registrant Identification Study. On top of that, as I mentioned earlier, there was a pre-feasibility survey for Relay and Reveal that was done by the InterAL Consulting Group, and their final report was out in 2012. Just looking really quickly at the notes I have of all of these surveys and studies, it would seem that the percentage, and please, I am happy to go back and check all these figures, so I'm just going to say it out here on the understanding that I'll go back and check them, that in terms of the incidence of usage of privacy and proxy services, they range from something like a 17% to a 20%. And Steve, I don't know if that 90% figure you had was the confidence rate that they reported, which one of the studies reported there was a 95% confidence level.
No, Mary, what might be it's not, and I know the difference between a confidence rate.
Yeah.
And
I know. I'm not saying you don't. I was just wondering if
ID study. If you look at the Who Is Registrant ID study,
yes.
The draft report said 3% of the registrations that they found in the proxy world, if you will, were privacy registrations. 97% were proxy registrations. This is the only point I was trying to get out here that. And I agree with Jay, with the previous comments that I don't see a reason to distinguish between these two categories in terms of accreditation. But one reason not to distinguish between them is that the findings are that that privacy services barely exist in the GTLD world. They're extremely small percentage. Proxy services are far more prevalent. I don't know the reasons for that, but I think if we keep that in mind as we work through this process, we should be thinking about proxy services. Obviously, if we come across an area where there needs to be some difference for privacy services, we should take that into account. But I think my suggestion is that our going-in assumption is that there would not need to be a distinction between the two. Thank you.
And Steve, if I may pick up on that point, and then Don, I'll hand it over to you, and then to Volker, is there is some data even in the NPL study that does show that if we look beyond the overall prevalence of privacy and proxy taken together, which is, like I said, the 20% or below, that it does show that the incidence of proxy usage is higher than privacy service usage. And again, that was not something that was investigated in this study either. Don?
Okay. I'd like to kind of, with deference to Volker in a minute, but I think it'd be worthwhile at this point to focus. I think for today's discussion, the really important issue is the prevalence of privacy and proxy in the registration space. I think the issues of misuse and the issues of use for abuse are important to frame certain discussions that we've already seen on the mailing list, but there'll be time to consider those if we need to as we go along. I'll do a side pitch here. Just mention that Richard Clayton is very well known and respected in the anti-abuse world, and if any of you are going to be at MOG messaging anti-abuse, and they've got a third A in there now, messaging anti-abuse working group sessions. He will be talking about the report tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have a final one soon, a final version soon. But at this point, I think we should just dive in to the template, start discussing the initial question about privacy versus proxy. And begin the substantive discussion. Volker?
Hello, can you hear me? Volker here.
Gotcha.
Hello?
Hello?
Ah, perfect. One answer. Hello?
Yes?
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you, Volker.
Ah, okay. Just one thing that I wanted to answer to Steven is Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Ah, perfect. I wasn't sure if my microphone was working there. So basically, I think one of the privacy services are so much in the minority versus proxy services is mainly ease of handling. Remember that a proxy service may only need one contact information, one set of contact information, whereas a privacy service would need one for every customer. So that may be a reason why a lot of operators have elected to go for a proxy service instead of privacy services. However, what I wanted to touch on really was the study again, and I just wanted to know, I haven't had the chance of the reading the study in its entirety right now, and I don't know where they got their data sets from. And mostly, the worth of the study is determined by its data set, so I was just wondering, Mary, if you could give us some information on how the selection worked for selecting domain names that would be a part of the study, and the grading of the finding was, i.e. what does partially true mean, what does true mean in percentages?
Okay, appreciate that.
Don, did you want me to answer that question?
Why don't we
take more questions, sure, and comments first?
No, why don't we answer that question? Let's move on to the comments template after you've answered that.
So let me first go back to the question of the data sets. In terms of the other studies that are not the ones presented today, they are similar to the extent that they are all based on the top five GTLDs. That was one of the conditions of ICANN in its RFP. The numbers are very different, and for example, some of the surveys like the ones done by NORC, the Registrant Identification Study, for example, a lot of them were randomly selected in proportions across the top five GTLDs, whereas the NPL survey, because it focused on the privacy and proxy services that were used for particular industries, was not as randomly selected. So, Volker, you were talking about you're asking for the prevalence of privacy and proxy usage across all the various things that were done in this particular study, right? And there are some tables that I can send around. It might actually be easier because in much of the reporting in this particular study, the privacy and proxy usage was not really differentiated. So, for example, in reporting on the percentage of pharmacies, firms, and so forth that used these services, it was privacy or proxy usage. So it might be more helpful, Don and Volker, if I actually took out some of those tables and sent it around rather than trying to break it down on the fly orally.
Yeah, I agree, Mary. I mean, it would be helpful, but probably to send them out rather than dig into it on the call would be useful so we can move along. Should we move over to the template document so we can start a discussion and explore the process using the template?
Tom, I don't know if Tim had a comment, and James, or was that from before?
I just saw his hand come up. Yeah, Tim?
Yeah, so in the process of all this, did we ask for this, for a review of this study? Is that why we're looking at this, or... And then just a few other comments. If we didn't, then I guess that's something that the working group should actually decide, right? Is what information do we need to review in order to inform our work? And So as we go forward, you know, it just seems like we're a lot of people were looking at this and thinking, wow, you know, we really spent time on something we didn't need to spend time on. So I'd just like to avoid that in the future. But as far as the study goes, if we're going to use this information, then, you know, is this as specific as the study gets, or is there more information if we were to look at the full study, like instead of ambiguous terms like significant percentage, does it actually give percentages? And then is there any comparison of that to what, you know, what we see in the normal pool of registrations as a whole, which would be helpful to tell, you know, well, is there something more significant going on there than elsewhere? But even then, I guess I'm not sure which question this actually addresses. And I would just hope that we, you know, that instead of staff selecting what we review, that the working group selects that. Now, maybe we did and I just missed it, but I think we need to be cautious about how much time we spend reviewing things that the working group hasn't really asked for.
Right. Okay, Tim, you know, I thought, well, maybe I didn't. To be honest, I think there was a miscommunication here on what we should be looking at. The chairs asked for discussion of prevalence of privacy and proxy services. And I think there's a legitimate question as to how much this study really addresses those issues. But, you know, the working group, certainly anytime you want. I think what studies and what information we presented is a joint thing of the working group, that every once in a while Steve and Graham and I may think that something would be useful. Volker?
Old hand, apologies.
Don, if you're speaking, we can't hear you.
This is Steve. I'm not sure if we've lost Don temporarily here. I think his suggestion was that Marika walk us through, show us how this template is put together, and we can start discussing the question before us based on that. Could you do that?
Yes, so this is Marika. So the template is up here. I said, you know, described already in more general terms, more specific terms for this specific question. So first of all, we tried to gather what, from our perspective, we thought was the relevant background information to this question. And again, you know, as I said before, if there's any other information that you think that needs to be added here, we'll also look back at you know, some of the studies and pull from there any additional information that may be helpful here. So first of all, we looked at the definitions that as they currently appear in the 2013 RAA. So privacy service there is defined as a service by which a registered name is registered to its beneficial user as a registered name holder, but for which alternative reliable contact information is provided by the privacy proxy serve provider for display of the registered name holder's contact information in the registration data service, WHOIS, or equivalent services. And proxy service is defined as a service through which a registered name holder licenses use of a registered name to the privacy proxy customer in order to provide the privacy proxy customer use of the domain name and the registered name holder's contact information is displayed in the registration data service, WHOIS, or equivalent services rather than the privacy or proxy customer's contact information. Then also pulled already some information from the WHOIS studies in relation to the ICANN study on the prevalence of domain names registered using the privacy proxy service among the top five GTLDs, which basically notes that the sample domain names registered on the top five GTLDs indicated about 18% of them use this type of service. And among these, WHOIS proxy service registrations were the most common, although I don't think it included any more specifics than that. And then I also pulled a quote from the WHOIS review team final report, which note that the review team considers that one possible approach to achieving this would be to establish through the appropriate means an accreditation system for all proxy privacy services providers. And as part of this process, ICANN should consider the merits, if any, of establishing or maintaining a distinction between privacy and proxy services. And basically then the template goes into the specific comments we've received on this question in response to the working group survey. So I don't know if you at this stage just want to start at the first comment and have a working group feedback on each of these comments to see whether there's agreement, disagreement, questions or comments about the specific feedback received at this stage. I don't know if Don is already back or...
Is Don back? Well,
we'll find out. Am I back?
You are.
You are.
Okay. I don't know what happened.
Welcome back.
Okay. Thank you.
I think Tim has his hand up.
I heard everything. I didn't know what happened with the mic.
I think Tim wanted to say something.
Yeah.
Yes. I was just... curious. So we're still talking about Category A, Question 2, and so this is information from the WHOIS studies, ICANN study on the prevalence of domain names registered using a privacy or proxy service among the top five GTLDs. Have we discussed that, or is this just a summary of it here that we are, and that's all we're using?
Well, I think this is the beginning of the discussion.
This is Marika. This is really just a first draft, and I just put already something in there, some of the things I found basically in the background information that's posted on the staff wiki. So information that, the working group has had at its disposal already for quite some time and hopefully had a chance to review, trying to pull from there what are the relevant elements for this conversation, but this is in no means meant to be, comprehensive, covering everything. So as I said, if you think it's helpful as well that we include direct links to where this comes from, so people can go back there, we can do that for the next version. Kathy already suggested as well that there may be a need for more diversity of sources. So again, if there are any information that we've missed or you think that is relevant to be included here, please provide us with the specific, either with the link or a quote or where we can find it so we can include it here. And again, really trying to focus on this specific question. And again, of course, if you already have information relating to some of the other charter questions, feel free to start sharing that as well so we can start adding that to the other templates as we start developing those.
This is Don. I just want to jump in real briefly and make sure that the folks on the call or folks in Adobe are scrolling down to be looking at pages 2 and 3. I think the template will make more sense if you're doing that. James?
Thanks, Don. James speaking, and that was actually something I wanted to comment on was the second to the last comment from Chris Pelling, which says only ICANN-accredited registrars should operate privacy proxy services. This is something that we discussed, I think, in the WHOIS review team and during the drafting of the RAA, and I think that it's important to remember that conceptually no one or anyone who submits to ICANN authority does so willingly. There's really not a mechanism for ICANN to go out to organizations and service providers and companies that it does not have under contract and then bring them under its umbrella. So I think, it would be very difficult to, in practical terms, to enforce this particular proposal. just because it would involve ICANN identifying unknown service providers and then somehow compelling them to behave in a certain manner. I think better is the approach that we took with the temporary specification in the RAA and the approach that we are taking with this working group, which is that you design an accreditation program and then you require registrars to only knowingly use those accredited service providers. And I think that's a much better approach than this proposal here. And I don't know if it's the appropriate time to do a deep dive into those things, but I'd be happy to discuss why I think that this proposal is a little too simplistic. Thanks.
It might be a little early, which is why I'm not going to come back with a bunch of questions, but I'll post them to the list. Steve?
Yes, thank you. This is Steve. Just picking up on the last comment. I think this comment is actually not relevant. I mean, to our question, which is should privacy and proxy services be treated differently? I think if you look at the responses we've received so far, and some people have expressed this on the list, there seems to be some support for at least provisionally saying we're going to treat them the same, have the same accreditation rules for privacy and proxy. I think the main exception to that I see here is from Emily Emanuel, John Horton, and Justin Macy, who seem to be suggesting that privacy services should have a greater obligation to verify the contact details of their customer than proxy services should. Now, we're going to get into the whole question of verification of the customer details, but maybe if Justin is on the phone, or I know he's in the chat room, if someone wants to could explain this further, because I'm not sure that I understand why, if you reveal the registrant's name and who is, but nothing else, you should have a greater responsibility to verify the contact details than if you don't reveal anything about the registrant in the who is, which is really a proxy service. So, but maybe someone from LegitScript could explain why they think they should be treated differently. Thank you.
Anybody from the company wants to take up the gauntlet? Oh, yes, Justin, thank you.
And while Justin dials in, this is Marika, just to note as well what I put in the chat. Of course, as the working group goes through these comments, in certain cases you may find that the comment is indeed not specific or relevant to the question at hand, but maybe more relevant for some of the other charter questions. So, of course, it's always an option as well just to, refer specific discussion on that comment to another question, and we can note that accordingly.
Well, judging from the work group activity so far, I think that'll happen a lot. There's a lot of cross-pollination a lot of crossover of different issues. Steve, are you still up?
I just wanted to say, while we're waiting for Justin to join the call, this question that Justin's written comment raises is one of the reasons why I was not in favor of starting with this topic. Because it's kind of hard to answer this question, maybe hard to answer this question in the abstract, should we treat privacy and proxy services differently? When you get down to the specifics, I think the question, the issue that they're raising in their comments is in B2 of our list. And so therefore we'll be getting to it pretty shortly, but we're not there yet, which is what are the obligations to verify customer contact information? And we might find as we go through it that there do need to be differences, but I don't know that this is one of them, but then we might find that there do need to be differences, but it's kind of hard to answer the question in the abstract. It's hard to see why there should be differences between the privacy services and the proxy services, in my opinion. Thank you. I don't know if Justin's got
Justin, are you there? Justin, if that's you squeaking in the background, something didn't work right. No, we still can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Here you go. Gotcha.
Great. I think our position on this would be that it depends on what other factors will wheel into the privacy and proxy distinction as to whether or not we should treat them similarly. Just like Steve, I think you said a second ago, we think it makes sense to kind of get a feel for what those other factors would be. We can see some differences between those factors later on in the process, and based on that, it might change how we should accredit them. Does that make sense?
This is Steve. Don, I was just going to point out, I think that's similar to what others have been saying, that when we get to the specific questions, we may be able to make this distinction more easily. Tim said this in the chat.
Yep, I think that's completely where we agree. I think it's difficult for us to determine whether or not we should accredit them or treat them the same way and throughout the accreditation process without looking to see what their responsibilities will be or how they will differ.
Don, I see Kathy has her hand up.
Hi, all. Kathy?
Sorry, I was on mute. I had called Kathy.
Oh, here you are. Okay. Great. Thanks. So my first question is, how do we submit our comments so that they can get into the chart? And the second question is a proposal that, for the purposes of going forward, we don't merge proxy and privacy services. We don't kind of say them in the same breath. We keep them separate because they seem to be separate. And if that means holding open the question of what we infer from that or what flows from that, we can't answer. I'm with Steve. We can't answer that right now. But what we're gathering is that factually these are different types of services, and what it means to identify the registrant in the privacy service versus not identify the registrant in the proxy service, I think can have enormous implications, and they've certainly been discussed over time and with the WHOIS review team and other groups. So I'd like to keep that placeholder that we continue, that we go forward and hold open and continue to kind of define privacy and proxy services according to their facts and hold open the possibility that they may be treated slightly differently or very differently as the accreditation process goes forward.
Okay, appreciate it. Maria?
Thanks, it's Maria speaking. Just picking up on something that Justin said. So I think when we're doing the accreditation, I presume what we're, the role of that is to measure up service providers against certain criteria, which are to do with the services they're providing. So I would also agree with what Kathy said in that we need to look at what, if any, different services privacy and proxy providers are providing and, what levels, what standards we want to hold them to. So I would support keeping them separate right now in terms of, yes, should at least in principle accredit them differently because we will be wanting them to uphold different standards. And just a second point, following up on what Therese had to say about Chris Pelling's points in the table, where Chris Pelling was suggesting only ICANN accredited registrars should be privacy proxy service providers. I think outside of, a lot of Western Europe and the US and maybe some of Latin America and that, a lot of people will have difficulty with that because there is a massive financial and I guess operational barrier to becoming an ICANN accredited registrar, much to the effect that we only have still to this day, I think 6 or 7 of them in all of Africa. So I think we shouldn't be placing barriers in front of people from other countries who would like to use typically a reseller in their own market and be able to access a full range of services. So, I think from a slightly developing country lens, that proposal looks quite different to possibly how it might look to us in Northern Europe or others in the US. So I think it's not just impractical, but I think it would also be quite exclusionary. So I wouldn't support that idea either. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Maria. The practicalities are going to be a big part of the discussions as we go along, and that's a good example of it. We have just about 4 minutes left. I'd like to do a quick detour since we at least do have planning for Singapore on the agenda. We have a tentative, I assume it's okay to say this. Raise your hand, Marika or Mary, if I'm stepping into bad territory. We have a tentative time of the work group on Wednesday morning from 9 to 10:30, which is the time we wanted and also a reasonable hour for those of us who don't do well with early morning. I think as over the next couple of weeks, we'll have to really carve out some time to discuss our agenda, a combination of internal deliberations for the public to watch, presentation to on what we've been doing. But it's also going to be the first time that we'll be in a position to hear comments. And I already know from some various anti-abuse and law enforcement mailing lists that I'm involved in that some people are going to be very interested in sharing their thoughts. Obviously, there have been chances to do it in writing before, but I think it's important to give the opportunity to hear what people have to say outside the, as long as we're all together. I'm glad to hear any other ideas on what we should be covering. Those are the three slots that occur to me offhand. Any thoughts on that? Okay. I think what we will do in the next couple of days, we meaning whatever we want to call ourselves, is kind of do a bit of a post-mortem on the call, see how we should proceed. I think right now, tentatively for next week, we'll be looking at Section B now?
That'd be B1.
Pardon?
That'd be section B, question B1. Be the
right.
Next one.
Yeah. And as much of that as we can cover. In the interim, we'll be how to process the calls maybe a little better, how to come up with a good structure for letting people comment on what's already in the template, and some other ways to make the input as we go along more efficient, because we've got a lot to cover over the next, right now our schedule goes out through September. With that, we're at 11 o'clock, so why don't we finish the call and look forward to talking with you all next week.
Thanks, Don.
Okay.
Thank you, Don. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everybody. Kathy, operator, can we stop the recording?
Thank you, Tim. You're now stop the recording. Thank you very much.